this morning, and we have our next guest with us this morning. I'm so excited to see you again, and welcome back to the show. Susan Kirsch is back with us, the founder and CEO of Catalysts for Local Control. You can find her at catalystsca.org or find Catalysts for Local Control on Facebook. They have a page there, so you can learn a lot more there. And they have a 5 o'clock Monday meeting every week, except for a few rare exceptions, where everyone can join in on a Zoom call to discuss current events, what their areas of concern are. Often it's legislation that is getting ready to hit the floor for a vote or a committee vote of some kind. And I'm sure we're going to get an update. Good morning, Susan. Good to see you.
Good morning, Marcia. It's so nice to be back. It's so amazing how fast the year has gone. And here we are in December. And just to comment on your intro, tonight is the last of the Catalyst calls for 2024.
Woo-hoo!
We're going to take a 2-week break and then hit the ground running again the first Monday in 2025. But to say, too, it's going to be a really great session, I think, tonight, as they almost always are. And I also want to just call attention, underscore what you said about our Catalyst website. And I think we're ending 2024 with just so many amazing things that if people want to check out some of what's going on, and I'll give you a couple of examples.
Great.
Like one, 2 weeks ago, I interviewed people who were on the Catalyst call. I think we had about 30 people on the call with that question. What have the greatest accomplishments been, in your opinion, for Catalyst in 2024? Like, basically, what do you just like about what we're doing, and what do you have in mind for 2025?
Mm-hmm.
And we've encapsulated and condensed all of those, didn't get everybody into a video, but we have a video on our website of, I don't know, a dozen or so people being able to comment on Catalyst and mm-hmm. how much some of the activities like the Catalyst calls, people really like the calls for a weekly check-in with people from all over the state talking about what's happening with their housing element or RENA numbers or the buildings going on up next door that are horrifying people for how many stories and how few parking places. So that's on the website. And then we're going to be talking tonight, too, about a written version of what the accomplishments have been. Catalyst Call, for example, has had almost 1,400 people, you know, many duplicates, but over the course of the year, about 1,400 people who have been on the calls with an average of 34 every Monday night being there.
Wow, that's fantastic.
You know, people talked about also loving Lobby Day, the April day that we went to Sacramento. They really appreciated the town halls and especially our What Matters series. And the answer to What Matters in a 4-part series was to say, safety matters was one session. The other session was taxes matter, elections matter, and the Constitution matters. So, and all of those are posted on our website as well. So some really wonderful things happening on our website.
Woohoo! Yes. Fantastic. And great, you know, references to use. So very, very, very handy to have all of those available to go back to. I know that I often find when I check in on your website, you've been able to reprint articles that have related to housing elements and other related stories from across the state. So things that, you know, we wouldn't necessarily pick up in Sonoma, but go, oh, this might be, great to compare against a situation that we are facing. And that's one of the handy parts of having Catalysts as a resource for everyone is, you know, people's problems in different parts of the state are all a little bit different. But when you start comparing them or going, okay, this is very much like it, and we hadn't considered this as a potential solution or as a potential way to work out this problem, or that we need to bring this aspect to the attention of the local government players involved. So it is a great resource to have Catalysts available.
So I'll build on what you just said in calling out what we have on the website linked to tonight's meeting, and that is there's a group of attorneys in California, Holland and Knight attorneys. So one of the things that we've included, and we've sent this out to everybody with our reminder of tonight's meeting, is a document that they've created called California's 2025 Housing Laws, What You Need to Know.
Yeah.
And they have done an amazing job of listing, there were 35 more housing bills passed last year on top of, 150 or 200 just in the past few years. Yeah. But what Holland and Knight has done is that they've broken these down and given you the Assembly or the Senate number and the category. So they have the bills that are going to be hitting communities that really, everybody is so busy. So even right. though we know we have planning departments in our jurisdictions, city and counties, just to say, there's a Housing Accountability Act and Builders Remedies, three mm-hmm. laws
right.
that came out under that category. There's enforcement and planning. So they're tightening the screws around what cities can or can't do
right.
for protection of their own safety mm-hmm. issues like fire and flooding or density, which is not going to serve people well, or things like that. So that's another category. Streamlining. So more bills on how they can cut neighborhood and community leaders out of the process to be able to have what they call ministerial review, just rubber stamping what big investors benefit from, but communities do not. They've got a whole category, six bills that'll be coming into play around the California CEQA, California Environmental yeah. Quality Act,
yeah.
which most of those are also continued attempts to downplay the importance of environment as
right.
the state is demanding communities to make decisions. And
right.
I can say just a little bit more about that in a minute around especially fire danger that is coming up in a big kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second to the last category are fees and how cities are less able to get fees out of developers. So their sources of money to maintain their own streets or parks or fire services or police services is being diminished. And I thought those were the last categories. There's actually three more. Accessory dwelling units, four bills about tweaking some more the ADU right. units, three bills on addressing constraints on housing production, and three more on affordable housing and financing.
Wow.
Just a
lot of categories. Yeah.
Those are the ones from last year, and we can anticipate that there will be a whole slew of new ones coming up
right.
in 2025.
Right, right. It's going to be
one
busy.
One of the good ones in 2025 is reported on in today's Marin Independent Journal, but I would guess it's out in many of the papers, and that's our assembly member, Damon Connolly.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's your assembly member
mm-hmm.
too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a bill that'll be heard January 2nd, which is on fire insurance policy, the way in which the insurance industry has been cutting out so many people.
Right.
And either just saying, we will not renew your policy.
Yep.
Or renewing fire policies, but doubling the rates. So rates going from what already seemed high at like $2,500 a year to people being hit with $5,000 for insurance. And even then, the policies are being written that there's going to be so many constraints about what you could ever regain through right. your policy if there were a major fire.
Right.
So hats off to Damon Connolly, who has a bill that's coming up in January to try to make this playing field a little more fair in actually protecting people wanting to have the insurance to protect their property wealth.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so complicated now, and there's so many exclusions. It really does feel like the homeowner much more is taking on the crapshoot, you know. And it was and it was supposed to be that, you know, the reason that you paid for insurance was that insurance companies were taking on the risk, yes, and spreading out their coverage in a blanketed way to spread out their risk. And now safety blankets left and right are being snatched away.
Well, and it's pretty much saying, if you have the safety blanket, you will have to pay for it. We'll write a policy that's going to basically say, if your property is destroyed, good luck. You'll have to rebuild.
You'll do it yourself.
You'll do it yourself, yeah. And we will even take the money you've contributed for your policy to redistribute it to others who might be in greater need than you are.
Right.
Even though your place is burned down.
Right. So this almost screams, you know, why am I not self-insuring? You know, why should I give my money to an insurance company if I'm not going to get anything in return?
Yeah.
So questions I am certain that homeowners ask themselves every single time they look at their policy renewals and what they might get and their changes to conditions. Is why are they even bothering to write the check? And of course, as you said, the other part of that is, what if they can't write the check? What if they've been told you're being dropped at the end of your policy expiration date?
Part of what Damon is trying to bring forward is the fact that the insurance companies seem to not be allowing for homeowners who have done, what's it called, hardscaping, I think they call it, they've cut the trees down surrounding their home, and they don't have flammable bushes that are right up next to the house. And they've done much, they've taken into account, they don't want their place to burn, and have taken some drastic measures, but as if the insurance companies aren't giving them any credits for that against what they're being asked to pay for insurance.
Yeah, a lot of mitigation and still not getting credit for it. Very frustrating.
Yeah. Very frustrating. Very.
So that's going to be January 2nd when that one comes up.
That bill is going to be heard right at the beginning of the legislative session.
Yeah. So it's going to be pretty quick. What else is on your list?
What else? Well, you know, I want to mention one other thing that's on our website for anybody who, and just to tell this story too, for anybody who's concerned about what's happening in their communities. And I mean, what we hear is that there are more and more communities where they have their neighborhood associations or their groups that are trying to look out for neighborhoods, and that city staff, including city attorneys, are seeming to be much more unified in expressing the wishes of the state over what the wishes of constituents are of the city council members. So there's a growing kind of tension between those two, and that there's an increasing amount of bullying and intimidation and misrepresentation of who and what could be happening in a community. So last week we featured, and we have the video on our, the interview video on our website, with an Emeryville City Council member, Kalima Pryforce is his name. So he's in his second, or going into his third year, I think, of the four-year term. And Kalima went on a hunger strike with a demand, an expectation to get 1,000 signatures for creating an ethics oversight committee for the Emeryville City Council. And what they had done to Kalima, because he's been a very outspoken advocate for tenant protections and for better understanding how it is that cities would be on the hook for RENA, the Regional Housing Allocation numbers, which are not making sense to hardly anybody, and still the state keeps marching forward saying that they have this great housing need based on numbers filled with errors. So Kalima has been, you know, a vocal, has been knowledgeable and vocal about that. And what the city council had done then in trying to curb him and curtail his being so outspoken was they took him off the committee assignments. You know, each city council has representatives to the transportation, the regional transportation, MTC, Metropolitan Transportation Commission, and the Regional Association of Bay Area Governments, and to LAFCO, as you were talking about in the previous segment, you know, maybe a dozen or more other appointments that a city council member gets. and to try to force him to comply with what the stated, really state message seems to be, is that they were curtailing and bullying him, trying to get him to submit to their point of view as if that would be the only point of view. So he used change.org and started notifying people he would not eat until there was an ethics oversight committee to be looking into this use of intimidation. And, you know, I'm really sorry to say, it doesn't sound that different than what our own state attorney general is often using in terms of, as cities try to be mindful of their own character and safety and provisions for their communities. Like, the threat is, if you don't comply with these state laws that don't have an evidence-based background to them, they don't have an economic base to them, that he will sue or withhold funding, or they have all kinds of provisions for that too.
Yeah.
So that interview with Kalima about what his motivation was, and he was, I think, into day 5 or 6 of the hunger strike. And over the weekend, I think it was probably last Friday when I checked, he had over 1,000 signatures. So I'm hoping he's back to eating. And I sent him an email inviting him to be on our show again tonight, just if he wants to come back to Catalyst Call tonight to give us like the 10-minute update mm-hmm. on how he's feeling
right.
and what the steps will be to try to restore ethics and honesty and transparency to what's happening in Emeryville. So
right.
just a huge appreciation, just really awe that he would set out to do that with
right.
so much conviction that he would put his own health and well-being
yeah.
on the line.
Yeah, not an easy thing to do.
No.
And then on top of that, during the holidays as well.
And he wasn't even wanting to lose weight or
That's
anything.
Right. right. Altogether quite challenging. Particularly when we're headed into a period in which we know that ethics and standards are being actively discontinued, for a nice way to put it, I guess, as we move forward into 2025 across the country and in our federal government. It's looking a little bit bleak in that regard.
Yeah.
So we have just a minute left. How do you want to wind things up, Susan?
A minute left. So just to say that with the bleakness and the darkness, I mean, just being aware of we're also in a holiday, that then with whatever tradition acknowledges, you know, that there are bleak and very dark times, and that in any of the traditions, there's also some spark of light and hope and a star or a little bit more oil or something that becomes available to keep hope and light alive.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful, you know, in a holiday season with presents, thanking you for allowing me to be on the show as regularly as I am, thanking all of the Catalyst people who come and help make things happen through legislation, action, and activity. And if anyone has any of the spending money for Christmas or holidays left in their bank account, Catalyst also has a donate button on our website page.
Yeah.
So, you know, always appreciate
right.
donations coming in to help buy
yes.
ink cartridges and paper and
right.
basic things.
Help out your nonprofit. Susan Kirsch, founder and CEO of Catalyst for Local Control. Find her at catalystca.org. Thank you, Susan, and happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.